Dame.
And I'm Rebecca.
And this is
BCMA Candid Chat.
So everyone, today I have with me Carmen, who is the account director and executive producer at St. Joseph Communications, and Mike Bascom, who's the senior director of marketing at Labatt. Welcome, guys.
Hi, how are you? Nice to virtually meet you.
Hello, everybody.
Carmen and Mike have worked together on this amazing series, branded series recently, which is the Chef Artois series for Rally for Restaurants. And we are excited to have them today talk about this series, talk about branded content and everything else. So let's get into it.
Thanks.
So, I would love to ask you, and you know, Mike, maybe we can start with you just about this, the campaign, because, you know, in researching it, I've started to fall in love with it. And now, actually, I had another call where I was talking to them about what you were doing, which inspired some more conversation about it. So tell me about Rally for Restaurants.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, if we think back, so sort of 8 months, which now kind of feels like 8 years ago when we were in the early days of this pandemic, you know, one of the first things that happened week one, like March, the week of March 16th, just before St. Patrick's Day, a critical time for bars and restaurants, we started seeing that they were getting closed down and shut down because we didn't really know what was going to happen. Very quickly, we understood that there was going to be potentially a very big negative impact on this amazing industry. So we came together and ideated and tried to see what we could do to help support them and help make it a little bit easier for them to weather the challenges of the pandemic. So came up with this idea of Rally for Restaurants, and really it's an online marketplace which enables consumers to go online, purchase gift certificates for their favorite bar and restaurant, which injects money into the pockets of the bar and restaurants today to enable them to, you know, help cover fixed costs and so on. And then Stella Artois pitches in an extra $10 for each gift certificate that's purchased. So it's been a great program. So far, we have, you know, over 1,000 restaurants that are signed up, and we've contributed more than $600,000 back into the industry.
That's amazing.
As I said, March 16th is when sort of this all started. And we were actually up and running. The marketplace was live by April 2nd. So it was faster than we've ever
been. Which that's really quick. That's amazing. And you picked up on an insight and did something that really helps the community, helps the economy. So I think that's wonderful for a brand to stand up and do that.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit too about the response, both from the restaurants and from the audience.
Yeah, I mean, I think for us, we are only as strong as the communities that we operate in. And one of the things that really makes our community strong would be the restaurants. I like to think, I mean, restaurants and bars are, it's like the heartbeat of a city or of a community. And if we lose the breadth and the variety of these amazing locations and places where we come together, these pillars of our communities, then, you know, we lose so much and so much of the fabric. And especially in Canada, when we think about what the diversity of our country is and our cities and communities and so on. So for us, it's, you know, our communities and bars and restaurants go hand in hand. Not to mention, of course, that we're in the industry where we rely on our partners in bars and restaurants to help, you know, engage consumers and bring them together with our brands. So they're our partners as well. And this is a time where we felt that we had a voice, we have a microphone, and we have a responsibility to get out there and help to support and do what we can. Throughout the pandemic, there were, you know, three key pillars for us as an organization that we were really focused on. The first was health and safety of our employees, so ensuring that everyone was okay within our company. The second is supporting our communities, so doing exactly what we're talking about. And the third is business continuity, ensuring that we are, you know, keeping the business healthy and ongoing. And you know, this is a program that really supports those last two pillars.
Yeah, I find it really commendable, because that's something that we've been talking about, especially at this time, that brands have so much power to change the community, to change the perception, and to do so much. And that a brand is actually standing up and doing all of that and actually taking action, not just paying lip service. I love that. I absolutely love that. And I absolutely think that's an example for others to also follow, that there is something that can be done. And it doesn't have to be crazy complicated, right? It's something that is related directly to your partners and your audiences. Moving to the series, can you tell us a little bit about the Chef Artois culinary series? Did I get that right?
Culinary. Yes. Yeah. So to Mike's point, we looked at the same, we looked at it from the same perspective. Like our goal for the series was how do we reinvigorate and support Canada's restaurant scene? That was really what our focus was when we actually developed and were brainstorming about coming up with the web series. So what we essentially did is we, the creation around Chef Artois was to create an 8-part competition series. Or a cooking competition series that really was showcasing, you know, how do we highlight these renowned chefs, these restaurants and their iconic dishes? And most of them are really trademarked, some of these dishes. And, you know, people are always, you know, searching the internet on how to recreate some of them. So we thought, let's build a series around that. And then we got Pei Chen, which is our, you know, a Canadian television and radio host, to actually host the series. So it really was an 8-part series that were 10 minutes in length, and it featured two dinner guests, really home chefs, that actually were randomly selected in the live audience, and then they would come up and had to recreate the actual iconic dish of that restaurant. And then within the hour, they battled it out. They showed their cooking skills. And then, of course, the executive chef judged it to see who won with the actual host. And then they were given a $1,000 gift package that actually included the gift card to the restaurant and also, of course, Rally for Restaurants. So that's really the premise of the culinary series.
I have to say, watching it, like, so having worked on shows like that myself, the fact that you were able to come up with this to partner with the bat, like just the way that you came up with this so quick, the production value is amazing. And I had said, you know, before, like it made me want to travel to different places, made me long for that, but also I felt like I was traveling, but also it made me really hungry, you know, and it was slick all the way around. Like it was totally slick. The camera, it worked. It was very well done for, I don't know what your time span was to put that all together, but it couldn't have been.
Well, that was the challenge. It was speed to market was really one of the hardest things that we had to do because we had to produce that content in one day and we had to edit the profile of the chef within that day and then actually have it showcase it to the actual cooking, the two home chefs, because they had to recreate it. So we edited that profile that morning and then showed it to them that afternoon or the day that we were actually shooting them to recreate the dishes. So the speed was really the biggest challenge and also editing it. Within
that's
the
what I was going to say.
Yeah, to know that.
Your editor must be... Yeah. Amazing to get it down
to
10-12 minutes.
So, yeah, I mean, any brand listening out there who's thinking that you need a lot of time to create a branded series, I'm referring you to Carmen and telling you, look, they did it in one day. So branded content is not crazy to create.
Well, it helps when you have incredible partners and the team that I work and collaborate with and came up with the idea with is the Boca Collective. And they are award-winning production studios. So they worked on shows like The Restaurants on the Edge. Mm-hmm. They have a Netflix show. So they know that space quite well and how to put these together. You know, it is an innovative format, but you need to have experts that understand that and building it on the spot like that. It was a challenge, but it was rewarding. We still can't believe ourselves. I mean, Mike knows, like working with his incredible team, Michelle Ski and the team, we can't even believe that we pulled it off sometimes of how quickly we were pulled together. And it was like for 8 weeks, not just 1 week. It was consecutive 8 weeks on the go.
I kind of think sometimes that COVID has pushed the magic to happen a little bit quicker. Whereas sometimes when you're allowed all that lead time, you know, you get different voices, different opinions in the room. It slows things down. And, you know, maybe that's one of the good things that's come out of the situation is the immediacy and just like get her done.
I also like the bite-sized format of it. It's 10 minutes, which is easier to consume for people also, especially at this time when, you know, they're looking for something. It's aspirational because you're taking home chefs and you're taking you're taking proper chefs and bringing them together. So at this time when everyone's in the kitchen, I think there's a lot of value there and there's a lot of insight there that just merges seamlessly together. So I love that.
Good.
Can you both sort of touch on how this came together? How the idea was conceived, like from both of your point of view?
I guess I'll start, Mike, if that's okay.
Sure.
Yeah. essentially, well, it came and literally, as I said, we were brainstorming on how can we support the entire restaurant scene. And so myself and Boca, we were on a separate shoot producing our safe shoot studio video for COVID because we were actually still considered an essential business. So we had to make sure to our clients that we were safe in terms of the way we're shooting. So we were working on that and we were inspired by what was happening, you know, with the restaurant scene and said, okay, we need to come up with a web series. What can we do? How can we support it? And then I listened to Mike's colleague, Todd, on a podcast. That's kind of how it started. And he was talking about the launch of the Rally for Restaurants program and the initiative. And then we said, okay, we found the alignment. This is how we're going to come up with this web series. We're going to align it to this initiative that Labatt's doing. And then I reached out to Todd and kind of the rest is really history. We went in with a series of ideas and big ideas. And then it got iterated to what it is the Chef Artois right now, based on Labatt's and the team's and Stella Artois' input. It came up to this Chef Artois culinary series. So it went through a series of iterations. And then we aligned it with Toronto Life because, you know, we had the series, but then how do you amplify it out? So we co-branded with them so that they can push it out against all their platforms and all their channels. Mm-hmm. So Mike, you want to add to that?
And from our side, it was a very easy decision. I think, first we were looking, as I said earlier, to amplify this message, make sure we were getting it out there to our audience and getting it out in a meaningful way that they were really engaging and interacting with the content, hopefully motivating them to go and then act and purchase gift certificates. When Carmen and team approached us, I mean, it was a natural fit, I think, especially with Toronto Life and the credibility and the connections that they have to the local restaurant scene in Toronto, but then also with some of the other publications that have a reach outside of just the city so that we can get our message out across the country. Combined then with a very, very talented production team and a really strong creative idea, it was a really easy decision.
Yeah, go ahead, Haim. I was going to jump ahead just because I think it sort of fits.
Yeah, no.
One of the things that I have faced is, you know, trying to get that brand to see that going the route of branded content, specifically in a series form, is the right way to go. So, I mean, you know, the tough questions, like Carmen, how did you convince? Was it tough to convince Labatt to do this?
Mike was so tough. I'm kidding.
Well, and to add in, like, Mike, was it tough for you to convince whether it's the team? Like, I know there had to, maybe there were, maybe it was just a magical experience all around. And that's why you're wearing hearts on your sweater. But like, usually there's some pushback somewhere.
It wasn't the pushback. Mike and team and Todd and Michelle, the whole team, they believed in the concept and the series. Right. I'm going to speak to my side, Mike, and you can speak to your side. But I think from our side, the convincing, it wasn't a convincing, it was just demonstrating the value of production with media and amplification. Because it when you're doing these kind of programs, there is a significant investment. It's not just brand advertising and buying media. The production value of it is enormous, and the commitment and the team and the crew that you have to put together to get these get these episodes up and running, as you would know, Rebecca. So it was just a matter of, okay, how do we amplify it so that there is an ROI for them from a production perspective and from a media perspective, and getting the exposure and the audience. And we really worked hard at demonstrating that from the production and media value. But then we also, throughout the entire 8 weeks, we shifted and adapted and had learnings, and we made it better and more powerful every week. We shifted media, we shifted where the, you know, where the metrics weren't performing. How do we make it better? Where do we put more of the investment to make sure the audience and the eyeballs were there watching it? And then from our perspective, from production standpoint, also, how do we improve it every week? How do we become more efficient? How do we make it better? How does the branding come out more authentically? All those sorts of things we adapted along the way as well. So the learnings and working on this on a regular basis, on a weekly basis, made you also shift and change and modify. So
the key word I heard
was worked with an incredible team. That was incredible to work with. And I mean this sincerely, you know, as much as Mike is on the call. They are inspirational as a team because they get marketing and they let you do your thing from a production and media standpoint, but they give their learnings as well. And we worked collectively as a team to make this a powerful series. And hopefully we get season two, but it does help to work with incredible marketers and a brand that understands it and gives you the autonomy to do what you have to do.
Yeah, completely. Mike.
Yeah, I mean, from my side, you've asked sort of two questions in one. I think the first is buying into branded content. And then the second is partnering with Carmen and team for this program. So I think, you know, buying into the idea of branded content is not something that is new to us. It's something that we've understood over the last number of years as consumer behavior has changed dramatically. As the way we talk to our audience has changed dramatically. We're no longer in the business of interrupting. We're really trying to be more in the business of entertaining. And we know that if we do that the right way, then our brands will reap the benefits. So you know, we've been going down this path for a while. And with that comes trying different things and the willingness to try different things and take risks. Specific to this program, There were two elements. One is the content and the strength of the content idea itself, but also almost as important, arguably equally as important, is the connection plan and how we're going to get that content out to our consumers. And that's what Carmen's referring to, where we were, you know, we had a lot of back and forth and challenging discussions just to make sure we were aligned on the approach that we were going to take to make sure that the message was seen. And again, I think that as partners, St. Joseph's they've got the ability to do both. So it was, again, really didn't take too much convincing.
Yeah. But it's amazing. Go ahead.
No, I love that, you know, this whole spirit of coming together at the table and making this happen in a collaborative manner. That's what I'm hearing from you guys, right? It has to be dynamic, be willing to adapt and change to the situation and optimize things and also sit at the table and understand each other. Understand the requirements of both sides and make it happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Can I, this is also just sort of a question I'm just thinking about is in terms of like your marketing dollars, let's say Mike, is this something, because obviously you are leaders in that space and it's more of a message for other brands that, you know, are unsure or they don't know how to go about it. But is it something that, you know, when you're putting aside budgets that you're actually, that's part of the picture? You know, obviously, sometimes it's lightning in a bottle and sometimes it's part of your ongoing plan. But, you know, it's like having that mandate to be creating storied content as you're going through the process. It's like something sometimes you have to think about ahead of time. Is that part of your whole strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's changed over the last number of years as well, where we used to be, you know, going into a year, we would have a plan locked 12 months. This is exactly what we're going to do March to May. You know, July, August, and so on. And we've evolved. We still for sure have planned campaigns and moments throughout the year that we're budgeting for, although this year everything kind of got thrown up in the air. But as we plan our annual budgets and we plan for our programming, we have a bucket of money that we're putting off the side. It's not very much, but it's some that we're putting off to the side to be able to be flexible and to move at the pace of culture. Because there are things that are happening that we cannot possibly plan for. Again, this year being a perfect example of that. So we need to be able to have the flexibility to reallocate dollars, move things around, or, you know, draw from that bucket to ensure that we can tap into really good ideas as they come. Because the worst thing that could happen is an amazing idea that aligns with your brand objectives and your strategy and is creative, and sitting there going, I'm sorry, I just don't have the dollars to be able to fund it. That would be unfortunate if our dollars were too tied up. So we manage lean budgets across our brands, just to try and be smart with how we invest them, and flexibility is key.
That is very smart, because it does happen a lot. Yeah. It happens a lot where the brand goes, but we have no money for this. And it's maybe Carmen, you encountered that a lot.
Yeah. It was interesting that Mike says that, because that was, you know, having been in the business for a long time, and myself, Rebecca, like yourself, I worked at Bell Media and brand partnerships. And, you know, those were the challenges that we faced on a daily basis when we were coming up with ideas, where brands would say, love the idea, but we don't have the budget. And that was one of my fears when I did reach to Todd and Mike about it, is were they going to have the ability to pivot based on what was happening in the marketplace to actually have the money available to do this kind of a series? Because it wasn't, it's not something that, you know, it's not thousands of dollars. It's quite an extensive package in terms of a buy. And so, you know, to Mike's point, having some of that money set aside for things that might happen, to be nimble, like they became nimble and agile to move dollars around to fund this, because it really aligned with their strategy based on what happened in the marketplace with COVID and all. So those are the challenges as from a media vendor perspective, production vendor, all of that together combined, that we face on an ongoing basis, is you might have the ideas, except the brand doesn't have the budget readily available to fund it at that time, because timing could be off, right? To Mike's point.
Yeah. One of the things I've also seen in my experience also is that brands that don't entirely break up their budget into this is print, this is television, this is for campaign A, campaign B, campaign C, are much more open to these kind of things, because a series like this, for example, doesn't fall into one bucket. It doesn't just fall into digital or social. Right, it goes across a lot of things. It's also a social message, right? Also supporting your vendors. So when, to your point, like you said, flexibility, and when brands are also flexible with those buckets and media mixes, really helps, I think. Do you think agencies are brands and brands are willing to embrace these kind of brand-backed series, scripted or unscripted, where the brand is not overtly present? You're not saying Labatt, 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 or Stella, Stella, Stella every 5 minutes. So do you think that's something that's acceptable and that's being opened up to?
Mike, do you want to address that first, or?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure. I mean, absolutely. We're willing to embrace it. Our agency partners oftentimes love it as well, because it gives them more free rein from a creativity perspective. And I think the key to this is ensuring that your brand has got a very, very clear and well-defined strategy and purpose. And if you have defined what that is, as well as a visual brand identity, so the way these things come to life, if you've identified those really strongly and you have a clear understanding of who you are as a brand, it becomes pretty easy to align to bringing this to life and to buying into it, because we are still being very, very consistent in the message that's hitting our audience. So, yeah.
Carmen, from your point of view and your experience with brands and agencies?
I think they're already doing it, to Mike's point. And we've seen that with so many incredible brands. Like, I mean, think about the Lego and the Lego movie. They're doing things like that. Or even Netflix, so much as they don't have advertising, but they do have brands integrated, right? So they are doing it. It's just that they're doing it in a way that's, you know, back to the beginning, in an entertaining way, which is the key behind it. Because at the end of the day, that is what branded content should be. It should really be branded entertainment, because the main focus should be that you're entertaining, and it should be story-driven or character-driven. Those are the things that really will engage audiences, because at the end of the day, a consumer doesn't care if it's brought to them by a brand, as long as it's engaging and it's good storytelling and it's good content.
Branded content, since we're the BCMA, we're moving to that. How do you look at ROI when it comes to branded content? We've spoken about your belief in it and why you think it's impactful, why you think it's good enough for brands, but eventually a lot of brands are asking about that. What do I get in return? And how do I get in return? So both from a creator and a client point of view. With Mike?
Yeah, this is, and I think this is unique to each piece of content or each program that you're running. Mm-hmm. you know, a couple things. This one is a little bit easier because we can look at, are we actually driving people to our site? Are we driving people to buy gift certificates to support the community, to support the restaurants? So easy to look at that. Also to understand the media value that we would get through the distribution network that comes along with this partnership. So those are sort of standard pieces. But more important to me is the ROE, the return on the equity of the brand.
Right.
How are we building brands through this? And that's not something you can, you know, really, we're not going to be able to get a metric that is definitive on how this content series has changed consumers' perception 100%.
I was actually going to ask before him smart question, I was just going to say, how do you actually determine, you know, how people feel, you know, about the, and, but then you, that's what you're speaking to, because I mean, the series definitely made me feel good.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, I mean, and we see that reflected in brand metrics. We're always looking at that. We're looking at the sentiment and the tone of the conversations that people are having around the content.
Yeah. Which is key. That's key, I think.
For sure. Yeah.
It increases perception. And like you said, it increases equity for the brand. And I love that that's something that you value rather than just sales numbers.
It's so customized, and it's not something that's black and white, or it sits on, you know, you can tick off and say, okay, we checked all the boxes. It really is. It depends on what your concept is and, you know, how much, what the production value is, and then, you know, how you're amplifying it out and where you're amplifying it. So it's all those combinations of things together. Also, you know, the length of time, yeah, you know, are you doing this, right? Like, you know, we had a great, we would have loved to extend this into a 10-week series, but, you know, we did it over 8 weeks. But, you know, sometimes brands don't have that sort of money to do it on a larger scale like that. And so things build, right? Especially this kind of stuff, it builds and grows. Mm-hmm. So you have to recognize that as well. So things sometimes in a shorter period of time, you don't give it enough time for it to breathe and to grow and to build that following. So the ROI measurement sometimes is not as successful, and it does, and it looks like it's not a successful campaign, but you just need that time to have it grow.
So here's the thing, where long term you can see more of the ROI, but short term seems to be an easier sell, right? So it's almost
it's dollars.
Yeah. And like, are you removing the fear by offering something that's short term? I certainly have seen where it's more like, it's a riskier move to sort of put your faith in like a long term relationship or a longer term series. Do you think that is maybe the way to go, is to look at something a little more short term that you can build on? Or
what we've done in the past, from my perspective, I'm not going to speak on Mike's behalf, because he's done way more programs on a different scale with Labatt. But from my perspective, and even over, you know, the success of my career, it's been a combination. Sometimes you do things where you're testing, right? Yeah. Let's see how it goes over the next few episodes, or these next few weeks, and then you sell it into a bigger long-term series or a longer-term campaign. So you do different things depending, again, your client, their investment levels. Some of them, they're new at it, so they don't. It's hard for them to separate from a media buy, right, where straight brand advertising, into something where it's not totally brand focused, right?
Yeah.
So those are the challenges, and not every advertising agency sometimes that I'm working with, because it's different when you're dealing with a direct client and then you're dealing with an agency, because the way they evaluate things are also different. But they're always pushing brand first. Whereas in this space with branded entertainment, it's really about, you know, the story, the entertainment, the narrative, the characters first. And it's not about the branding. The branding is there, but it's in a subtle way. And so that's where, you know, the complexities come in, right? When you're rationalizing ROI, right? Because sometimes they'll say, well, if I'm buying a full page ad, or I'm buying a 30-second spot or a social platform campaign, it's all about them. And you know, these sorts of things are not about the brand.
Yeah.
Well, I think you definitely capitalized on a really great moment in time where we're becoming, I don't want to use the term verb, becoming woke, but we're becoming woke. Like, it's like sort of, you know, that whole feeling of, you know, it is more about our human stories much more so than about, you know, who's got the best campaign and they're selling this, selling that. I feel like it's now becoming about like, what's the good that we can bring to the world? That's what's happening now. Do you want to speak on that? Oh, sorry, Hema, I cut you off, but I just...
I just wanted to add, because Carmen mentioned media buys also. I think one of the other things that I've seen happen with successful campaigns is you have a great idea and you have a great story, but also figuring out how to get it outside to the consumers in the right way, to the audiences in the right way.
You know, when we were doing this, we were quickly trying to go into market before all the restaurants shut down again. And there was a lot of factors coming into play with this, right? So we basically had first started dealing with Todd, and I think, and Mike came in later, but I think it was back in April when I pitched it, and then it sold into, in July, was it, Mike, that this got greenlit?
June, July.
Probably around that, right? Yes. So that's how long the process was. But again, we were adapting quickly to also market conditions and what's happening, what was happening with COVID. So a little bit different.
Yeah, and if I can just go back with something that you feel is going to be a main focus going forward in the way you advertise.
It's a key pillar for all of our brands is building purposeful, meaningful brands. And that's one way to do that. I think more than anything, you know, and in the context of branded content and entertainment, it's around providing utility to our audience. So, and that can come in the form of, you know, literal value or just simply giving them a reason to, you know, put a smile on their face you know, getting them to tune out some of the things they don't want to worry about and you know, enjoy some good stories, right? So by doing more and more of that, we will forge more meaningful connections with our audience. It also, we have the ability to connect with them. You know, we can connect across shared passion points in a way that we never could before. So here's one where our audience is passionate, especially for this, passionate about food. We as a brand are passionate about food. It's not just an occasion, it is a passion point. And by doing this type of activity, we can really connect with them in those shared values and shared shared passion points. So
I think the what you said was just key there, passion points, because when it comes to whether you're making for broadcast, linear television, feature film, branded entertainment, it's you, the fandoms, the fans. Mm-hmm. They come together out of a passion, so people wanting to be a part of a community or part of their tribe, see their tribe. It's all about the passion in it. So I think like that's amazing that you're using that word or recognizing that that's the key driver and what unifies everybody and uplifts,
What do you think are the major misconceptions or maybe fears surrounding branded content that often prevent brands from investing in it?
The entertainment is first, and the branding is secondary to this type of to in branded content or branded entertainment, and that's where the challenges come into play with agencies pushing branding first versus pursuing the story and the narrative and character driven storylines. I think that's where the challenges come in from my perspective. When we're trying to sell these things, it's like, let's be subtle. It's about what's entertaining to the audience, what's going to engage with them. And then secondary is the brand. And it really comes down to that equation. It's really simple to that. Is it worth it? Is the money worth to the client from that perspective? And is the money worth to the client? And is the time worth to the audience? Like it's that equation broken down simple to that. But with agencies, it's really pushing the branding first. And it's a challenge from that perspective.
So I think you should be creating more of these series for each of the different properties, you know, because
different brands, I agree.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, there you go. You're welcome. I'm on the job. I'm on the clock. I've got ideas. We're going to hook up after the show. I'm going to give you the snap, you know, the elevator pitch in like 2 seconds flat. I know.
Rebecca, you guys and Hame, you were asking the question around the misconceptions and the fears behind all this stuff. But I think I just, it's important to weigh in here in that there's a couple of things. I think that first off, it's people like being comfortable. So there's a hesitation to move away from the things that are proven. But I think if we continue to do that and we stick with what was proven yesterday, we're going to be left in the dust because as we all know, and we've made the comment a couple of times today, things are moving faster than they ever have before. So you need to be reinventing the wheel, trying different things, taking cracks at, you know, different approaches. And it doesn't mean going all in, but it means testing and learning. And this is a great example of a project where historically it would be, you know, when I started in this industry, you'd create an ad, you'd throw it out there and it was done. Okay, how did it perform? You'd come back and look at it a couple months later. Now we're creating content in real time. We can see how people are engaging. We can adapt the next episode. We can make it better. We can change the connection plan. We can build. So even within a series, you can build. And then to the point that Carmen's making, you can take those learnings. And then when we do sort of the postmortem, say, okay, what worked, what didn't work, and how can we really take the next level or the next round to the next level? So comfortable being uncomfortable, get out of that comfort zone is a fear and something you need to do. And then the other one is being willing to give up control, right? So we used to dictate every single shot. And you could do that when you're filming a 30-second TV spot. You can't when it's a 10-minute video. And you need to be comfortable giving up some of that creative control and trust the partners that we're partnering with. But again, that comes down to ensuring that you've got a very strong strategy for your brand and a foundation and identity to evaluate against.
Now, really quickly, if you could go to a country and eat a certain kind of food, it could be even here, but abroad, what would the country be and what would the food be? All right, go. You have 2 seconds. Mike, go first.
Oh my God. I want to go to Brazil and eat barbecue, Brazilian barbecue.
I was like, faster, faster. Okay, Carmen.
Italy in Tuscany to eat wild boar pasta. What?
I got chased by a wild boar in Italy once. That was crazy. I can't even believe you said that. Okay, go. Hey.
Favorite cocktail? Carmen.
Negroni. Mike. I mean, Stella. I should say Stella first. Stella. Ah. And then a Negroni.
Stella or Cola? Stella. Anyway, yes.
Mike.
That was an easy one, Carmen.
I know.
Mike, favorite cocktail?
Stella or Cola? In a chalice.
In a chalice.
In a chalice.
It has to be in a chalice. Yeah. I have one with my name engraved on it.
You know?
What's your guilty snack of food indulgence when drinking? Mike?
Cheese.
Cheese.
Yeah, mine was the charcuterie board and cheese board, yeah.
Mine is always chicken.
Chicken?
I eat chicken at every meal.
Oh my gosh, that's
anyways.
Funny.
Okay, last question. A favorite campaign or branded content or entertainment series you've seen in recent times that's not your own? Mike?
I think P&G, The Look and The Talk are amazing.
And Carmen?
Mine was Dove. The Dove Show Us, the hashtag Show Us. The real beauty campaigns to me, right? Because it's cause marketing. It's instilling confidence back to women. So yeah, for sure.
Perfect.
And what about me? Mine is the chef.
Yes, Rebecca.
Thank you both so very, very much.
Thank you.
This has been, it's been fun, but we've learned a lot. And definitely it was great to talk to you both about the campaign because it's excellent. And we're going to put out information about how everybody can participate and where they can go to see it. And I hope you're making more. I hope you get a season 2.
Thank you, Rebecca. Thanks for the compliment. Yes, Mike, we hope you get season 2.
Hashtag rally for restaurants.
Yes.
We'll see the results.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much.
Go watch the series. Go to Rally for Restaurants. Buy a gift card. Support your restaurants. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Eat local food and drink the beer.
Yes.
'Enjoyed the discussion?
Have suggestions on topics you'd like us to cover?
Like, comment, and share below and tell us what you think.
And stay tuned for more episodes of Branded Content Marketing Association's Candid Chats
with Rebecca
and Haim. See you next time.